Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Ed Moya, Senior Market Analyst over at Oanda. Now Ed, there's actually a few things for us to talk about today in terms of markets and some economic data. We'll start with the economic data and most importantly the economic data that came out of China. We saw a growth of about 4.9%. But that was a little bit below the estimate of 5%. And this growth pace, 4.9%, is actually the slowest we've seen in a decade. Now, we've talked about, and everybody, I think, understands that there is a bit of a power crunch going on. They have rolling blackouts going around China. So these aspects that do slow down production and general economic factors, well, they are playing a role then in some of that lower data. But do you take anything larger away from, yes, China's economy is still growing, right around 5%, but again, this is the slowest in a decade. Is there something to be worried about here, Ed?
I think there are some short-term concerns. You're seeing that China is still battling a potential property crisis. They're trying to contain the risk from Evergrande. Also, too, energy prices have really been impacting manufacturing activity over there. So I think there are a little bit of growing bits of nervousness that you're going to see this also a disappointing fourth quarter. The Communist Party, they're going to have a key meeting early November. And I think you're going to see that they're going to do everything to contain the risk from Evergrande. They're going to continue to provide more support, and I think that they're I think no one's really concerned that China's going to go into contraction, but I think the short-term risks are there, and the energy factor is really the big question mark for them. So I think there's still a lot of reasons to be optimistic that you're going to have pretty strong growth from China going forward. But the short-term risks are making some nervous. And that's why I think you're probably going to see a little bit more cautious of investing in Chinese stocks, so probably in the short term.
Do you think we're going to see any moves by the People's Bank of China to either shore up some more capital or anything that they could be doing to, again, kind of add to some of the growth data coming up?
Yeah, I expect that they're going to be active again. I think I would not be surprised if we had more cuts this quarter. And I think there's one of the important things you have to remember is that next year is an election year. You're going to see she wants the economy to be heading in the right direction, definitely by the second quarter. So I think you're probably looking at these supply chain issues, these commodity surging commodity prices, those will moderate by then. And I think you'll probably see, though, they'll need to act. So I would not be surprised if we had some more support from the PBOC at some point in these next couple months.
Well, Ed, you brought up the surging commodity prices, particularly in energy and oil. A lot of people were expecting it when it got in the 60s or 70s to pull back down to the 50s, but we see crude oil at $81. We see nat gas having pulled back some. That was the big move, mostly on weather-related issues. What do you make of the energy markets here?
Well, oil, that deficit's not going away anytime soon, and I think that you're probably going to see OPEC Plus has shown their cards with their OPEC Plus cuts. Compliance rate still above 100%. I think at 115 or 116%, so kind of matching what they did in August. So I think you're not going to get an extra amount of supply to meet the current market needs. And if you take a look at how the demand outlook's unfolding, truckers. Distillate demand is, those inventories are dropping. There's still tremendous demand there. The airliners are anticipating, international travel to pick up on November 8th after the Biden administration signaled that. So there's strong reasons to be optimistic. I think right now, we've had a couple bills and some of that is seasonal, just based off of maintenance season and the end of the peak driving season. But there's there's still an oil market that is going to be very vulnerable here to keep on rising. I think, you know, $90 oil, $100 oil in the short term is potential. There is potential that could happen. And a lot will be determined on the weather. You know, that nat gas shortage problem is not going to be alleviated anytime soon. And you know, I think today we saw crude, you know, pull back a little bit on that mild weather report that we could see, I think, some warm weather for the rest of October for Europe and also across the U.S. So I think this fear that, you know, if winter is really cold, then you're going to see that is going to lead to extra demand for crude as alternative sources of energy are going to be that's going to be the theme, I think, for a lot of China, Europe, and India as well. So I think you're probably going to see any dip with crude is probably only to be bought. Now, I think once the market loses its deficit, then you're going to see prices normalize pretty quickly. So I think that if you have $90-$100 oil, then, you know, no one's going to be surprised that, you know, the Biden administration, the Chinese tap their strategic petroleum reserves, and then you'll see prices quickly, I think, come back down. And I think once you get more production out of OPEC, then, you know, the expectations are still pretty high that, you know, by March or April, that we'll be back at the mid, at the $70 region for oil. So I think there's this belief that this is all short term, but, you know, you could have a lot of momentum here, I think, still for crude prices to go higher.
Even $70 oil, though, that's generally higher than we've seen really ever since 2014, when oil was more or less hanging around, well, some of those higher up in the $100 range, but then dropped very quickly. And it's been a grind for oil just to get back up to 70 outside of that little bounce in around 2018. But Ed, for the oil sector, as much as we want to analyze some of these short-term swings in demand from the consumer, isn't the supply story the biggest picture here? And as you said, if OPEC does ramp up production, then that could bring prices down. But they seem to be pretty steadfast on keeping production fairly tight, which to me means that as long as OPEC's tight and as long as the U.S. isn't drastically increasing their rig counts, that oil will stay generally higher than we had seen it in the last few years.
I think that will be the case. And I think for me, the biggest factor why I probably lean more towards the bullish side for oil is because during the pandemic, we saw, you know, all the oil giants, you know, slash their investment in new wells. And that has not changed. They defended their dividends. They have not really invested in wells, but actually they've, you know, broadened their portfolio to renewables. So I think you're seeing that, you know, the transition into a newer, cleaner energy is really going to impact the outlook for crude prices, I think, for the next few years. So I think because we're not having that investment in new wells, we're going to see some shortfalls. They're going to be unexpected, but they're going to happen. And that is likely to be the theme because we're still seeing the rest of the world, you know, bounce back from COVID-19 and their crude demands have not really returned to pre-pandemic levels. So I think you're probably going to still see widespread demand pickup internationally, and I think that you're having a lot of hesitation to especially for the oil giants to you know, have more output. I mean, right now you're benefiting from strong demand, high prices, and little government interaction. So I think they're going to try to take advantage of these profits because eventually, you know, it's going to be a lot more expensive to have the world powered on renewables. And I think they're, you know, everyone's quickly realizing that. So I think it's going to be hard to get rid of crude Right now, that's why you're still going to see, I think, that hesitancy to ramp up that output. But I think there will be a battle for market share amongst OPEC Plus members, and eventually, I think a big story is going to be Iran. As far as you know, after a few more months of negotiations, will we start to see possible sanction relief if they bring back that nuclear deal agreement? So lots of variables, lots of things that could really, you know, tilt oil in either direction. But right now, I think the risks are still to the upside.
One thing to remember, too, is that oil, it was about a year and a half ago that it dropped into negative pricing. So these producers were not making any money, and now they are starting to make some pretty decent margins, and they're not that quick, it sounds like, to cut some of those margins. So something to consider, but either way, man, oh man, this oil market continues to look quite strong. Let's move over to the bond market, because we're seeing kind of a global rise in yields right now. The 10-year in the U.S., that is very close to 1.6%. But even over the weekend, we saw rates in Asia broadly rise on the back of some higher inflation data. We also have in Europe, rates are moving higher. And we also had a Bank of England governor who said that monetary policy just cannot stay the same, especially if we are seeing longer-term inflation expectations rise. Again, it's all about yields rising globally, not just in individual countries. How critical is this, Ed, for the overall markets?
Well, right now, I think we're seeing a major reset here within just, you know, how persistent inflation has become and what central banks are going to be doing. I think, you know, the Bank of England is now expected to raise rates in December, which is a lot sooner than the summer forecast a lot of people had just a couple weeks ago. The Fed, similar story. I think December 2022 was when people were kind of on the fence. Maybe they can move, maybe not. Then all of a sudden last week, and the move in Treasury yields started to take, and now, you know, it, inflation, you know, these supply chain issues are not going away for probably two quarters, and you're seeing the Fed expectations for a rate hike go from maybe December to fully pricing in something done in July. So I think there's this fear that central banks got inflation wrong, and now you're seeing a lot of people reassess their interest rate hike schedules. So I think the market is it's really gone aggressive in timing a Fed rate hike. But I think that you're still looking at possibly one rate hike next year. And I think it's all going to depend on when does inflation start to moderate. And I think the growth outlook is still strong. I think you're still going to see continued progress in the labor market. But no, I think the market is getting nervous because inflation is the one thing that could really derail the outlook. Now we're still dealing with the brunt of these pricing pressures.
Well, Ed, just shifting over to one other market that's been on the move lately, and that is the cryptos. It could be that some investors are going there to camp out to get away from this runaway inflation, but there's also the whole speculative side of the cryptos and the new inputs from the emerging ETFs that are coming to market and some of the larger funds. So how do you see the setup in the cryptocurrencies markets? And as Bitcoin is near 61,000, pushing 62,000, do you think it's going to get back to its all-time high and break out to a new one?
Well, yeah, there's so much buzz with the cryptoverse. It's about to get a whole lot bigger. And right now, the buzz over the ProShares Bitcoin Futures ETF launch for tomorrow, Tuesday, is really exciting a lot of investors. And you're probably, I think there are expectations, too, that Invesco will get their futures ETF approved, which should lead to a lot of one-way interest into cryptos. So I think a lot of brokers are excited that you're going to see a whole probably a wave of retail investors that are going to, I think, get some exposure to cryptocurrencies. And right now, it looks like a lot of I think brokers are only going to offer the ability to go long. I think there's going to be a waiting period before you really could see some selling. So it seems that this is just very positive news short term for cryptos. And right now, you're probably going to have a lot more investors that are just going to say, well, it's been the best performing asset in 2020. It looks like it's going to be the best one again in 2021. And you're going to have, I think, some people just kind of, abandon some of their losing trades and whether they want to just, get maybe a 1% exposure into cryptos, this is probably going to be the vehicle they use. So I think it's an exciting time for the cryptoverse, and you're going to see the next move really depend on the uptick in trading volumes. If there's strong volumes with these new ETFs, then you're going to see, I think, a lot of people are going to try to, capitalize on this momentum.
Sounds like if we see some tax loss selling in other sectors, you think that money could rotate into cryptos. Ed, if we take a step back and look, there are generally some negative comments about cryptos, and a lot of people point to potential regulation as being the biggest downside risk for cryptos. Do you agree with that? What do you think are some of the key downside risks here? Is, look, we clearly are still in a fairly strong bull market for cryptos.
Yeah, and regulation is something that's always going to be happening, especially in such a new space. Even today, there were two unnamed crypto firms ordered to get shut down by the New York Attorney General. So there's still, whenever there's tremendous opportunity, there's bad players, there's Ponzi schemes, there's scams, and I think that you're going to see a lot of investors need to be careful with how they gain their exposure. And that's why the ETF is being really positively viewed as a safe way for many to gain exposure into cryptos. But I think that you've seen, most countries have shown their cards with when it comes to cryptos. China has been, since 2013, they've been making life difficult for cryptos, and now they've done everything but say it's illegal to hold Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. I think you saw the shock that the collapse that we saw this year was mainly because of China's actions and crackdowns on cryptos, and now the U.S. has really, I think, provided an alternative stance where they're going to try to regulate it. And the Fed is still unclear whether or not they're going to offer a digital dollar. They're still trying to work out their central bank digital currency paper. But there's this belief that the Fed, if they do launch a digital dollar, it's years away. And right now you're going to see that the current market has truly become decentralized. I think there's been tremendous growth in the U.S., but you're seeing that there is, I think, it's been spread across emerging markets. It's been spread across large parts of Asia, and there's this belief that you're going to really see, because of this inflationary fears that's happening across a lot of the world, that many people are parking their money into these cryptocurrencies. So I think that you're going to see further regulation, but I think the market is no longer in fear that this regulation is going to lead to the end of cryptocurrency trading. It just it's hopefully going to just make it a safer environment to trade and invest in.
Well, just one more question, talking about the inflation, and we really covered the energy markets and how those are soaring higher. The cryptocurrencies, when they're mining, use a lot of energy. That's been one of the other knocks about them. Could that be another headwind they face? Because as energy prices keep going higher and higher, these crypto miners are going to be more energy hogs, and it may be that there's pushback from citizens saying, hey, you're eating into our power grid. So do you think that could be any potential further headwinds for the cryptoverse?
I think short term, yes, and you're going to see that get politicized. That message is easy. It's an easy one. But there are some key upgrades. Ethereum 2.0, that upgrade is likely to help with the energy consumption concern. There's been some progress made in addressing that, but you know, there's, given a global energy crisis, you know, you can't get around that. The electricity consumption or whatever energy is used to power these cryptos is probably desperately needed in several countries. So I think that is going to become a growing concern. And right now, though, it's not impacting. I think it's not really dominating the headlines. So until that becomes a bigger concern, I think it's still, it's like green lights across the board. But I think that is an important development that will eventually possibly lead to the impact of the hash rate, and that could trigger. We all remember what happened when China had a couple of electric outages in some key crypto areas, and then we saw Bitcoin crumble 20%. There's a very important need to track the energy story on cryptos. But right now it's not really impacting the market. But I think yes, that's going to be a potentially a big bearish catalyst there.
All right, Ed, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for addressing a wide range of sectors, and I think some of the key moves today, which is already kind of a slow day for the markets, but some interesting data coming out, and again, yields moving higher and crypto's moving higher. That seems to be the story of today. Ed, thanks as always for your time, buddy. We'll chat again next week. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. You too.